Welcome, listeners, to Leadership Lounge, where we have conversations with business coaches and share ideas to elevate your team. I'm your host, Tiffany Voorhees. In this series, my co-host Ryan White and I dive deep into the world of business coaching. Have you ever wondered how a skilled coach might be able to help you or your firm? Well, you're in the right place. Each episode, we sit down with a business coach who shares their tools, insights, and practical tips. From personal coaches to strategy planning specialists, and even a hostage negotiator who coaches on listening. Our guests have guided organizations through economic storms and sunsets. We will explore topics like the ROI of coaching, how investing in coaching pays dividends beyond the balance sheet, effective execution, how coaches can help your team stay on task and complete those lofty goals. Innovation igniters, unleashing creativity within corporate walls. And culture crafting, shaping cultures that attract and retain your top talent. Together, let's go on a journey of insight, inspiration, and impact. Remember, success in business is a team sport, and our coaches, they know how to write a game plan for business victory. Hey, listeners, before we start this episode, I want to let you know that it contains a very brief story on a sensitive topic. We interview a hostage negotiator who coaches business professionals on active listening and communication. In relating his experience, he shares a brief scenario where someone threatened self-harm. The story ends on a positive note, but may be sensitive to some listeners. If you want to skip that specific story, the timing is listed in our show notes. With that, here's our interview with hostage negotiator, business coach, and master listener, Dan Oblinger. All right, Dan, thanks for joining us. Appreciate you coming on today. I'll do super quick intro because I've worked with you several times before and Ryan has not. So this will be a fun experiment. I have been in probably four different sessions of yours, some really small and some really large. I'm always taking away different things and getting good reminders of how to shut up and listen. So I guess we'll just start with that. Go ahead and introduce yourself and talk about what you do.
I'm a hostage negotiator and I am a consulting negotiator for consulting engineers, construction managers, and architects, which is a strange title. You probably haven't heard of that too much, but it just means that I'm the fractional chief negotiation officer for companies. I help them build cultures of emotional communication, active listening, and relationship-based negotiations so that they can make more money and get more friends, the kind of friends that want to work on the team for a very long time and eventually succeed the existing leaders so that the company continues on into the future very healthily, but more importantly, in a way that attracts more talent and more revenue. So that's what I do.
You talk about negotiation, being a hostage negotiator. You also mentioned a lot about business. We're the Geoprofessional Business Association. So everything we do is about that business side, selling our value, being more willing to talk about our value and sell to that versus just the hour and the minutes, you know? So talk about that. How does negotiation tie into that from what you've done specifically?
Well, and that's going to depend on the definition of negotiation. There are certainly some definitions of negotiation that would not lend themselves to like geotech services. The widget sales kind of meet me halfway, compromise, price per widget, getting it down or getting it up, depending on which side of the table you're sitting on. That's not as useful. But when it's relationship-based negotiations, because we pursue work as a team internally, we team with our clients, which is an unusual business relationship for a lot of other industries. Like, there has to be close communication and collaboration with the client to deliver the project well. You're collaborating with other disciplines in design, usually on a bigger project. And then somebody's got to build stuff in many cases. So you might have to be, you know, partnering with a team of contractors. And then internally, you're always doing teamwork. You're executing agreements to get stuff done at a certain time in a certain way. And this is all negotiable. There is an ongoing discussion, an ongoing dialogue about value and about what's best. And this is classical negotiation, particularly somebody with my background coming from the police crisis and hostage negotiations. It's very much a relationship-based business. And we want to come to a strong agreement based upon consent. It's not just, this is the tough part for us, geotech professionals. We don't just want our counterparty, whether it's internal or external, we don't just want them to do what we want to do. We want them to want to do what we want to do. And that's trickier. But when you get there, all of a sudden, collaboration is like accelerating. We don't have to check up on our counterparty. Like, we can begin to trust them to execute plans because they've bought into the vision of what we're doing.
Okay. You said the word negotiation a lot, and obviously you're a hostage negotiator. When we were talking a while back and you said, yeah, we're going to talk about negotiation, I remember I said, you know, years ago, you were talking about active listening. I was way more comfortable with that language. Like, I want to practice active listening. And you kind of called me on that. You said, every conversation is a negotiation in business, with team members, with clients. Like, don't be afraid of that word. So you helped me not be afraid of that word. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, and this is kind of weird, working with consulting engineers, especially like geotech, and the really technical services industries, is we want to pretend that we don't charge people money. Go with me on this. It sounds crazy, right? But when you think about it, it's like, no, I'm much more invested in the value of the craft. Like, when I love working with people in your industry because y'all are so passionate about your professionalism and you love the design and you love to work with clients and serve them. And then it comes time to talk about payment. And everybody's like, well, yeah, we should probably get paid. And I'm like, no, wait, you actually will have better clients if you're better about having the fee discussion. And we're not even talking about like money yet, right? We're just talking about value. And we can talk more about that maybe. But this is where I think, and maybe this is what I did with you and some of your teammates too, is negotiation, the proper outcome of a good negotiation in a relationship-based model is not money. It can't be money. Because if you need money, just go rob a bank. Like, there is something way more valuable than money, and that is the kind of relationship that is revenue generating. The kind of relationship where people will continue to bring us work they want done, knowing that we're going to provide an incredibly valuable design and execution. Because then that's the golden goose, not the golden egg. Like, it's going to begin to produce not just work for them with a fee, but then they're going to bring us all their client friends. And we're, you know, the golden goose pretty soon becomes a flock. And that's what we want. So for that reason, we have to understand that there's a different outcome of negotiations for us. We're not seeking money. We're actually seeking clarity for us to make good business decisions and clarity for our counterparties so that they can see our value and want to do business with us. And then they can make a strong, good business decision. If you have two consenting parties getting great value, you'll have a strong agreement. That's the proper outcome of negotiations. Then the money is a byproduct of that outcome. The money is just going to happen then, because not only will they want to pay you, but you'll have projects you've properly scoped, and you'll have good revenue. Like, it'll be a very profitable project for the company. If you realize that, then you're like, okay, so I'm not just out there trying to maximize the money. No, you're there actually to maximize the relationship. And when that relationship is in the context of serving a client, the money will come.
Okay, I'm going to pivot here based on what you talked about and pull Ryan in, because something I've been talking about with Dan recently is how to get people more comfortable talking about money. And I'm probably bad at coaching people on how to do it because I'm just naturally super comfortable with it. Like, I have no problem calling and having a conversation with somebody and then saying, okay, sounds like everything's going well. You're getting close to 90 days on the invoice. Do you have everything you need? What can we do to get that taken care of? You know, super comfortable for me. So, Ryan, I'd like to know, is any of that resonating with you or what you see in your firm with people asking for what they're owed?
Yeah, I think engineers in general are so focused, this is a broad generalization, on the technical side of things and that value and money discussion. We rarely want to have that. I've become fairly comfortable at it, but it definitely takes practice. And I would say generally, a lot of people are uncomfortable having that conversation.
It is not industry specific either. It's certainly most industries, especially again, design professionals, technically minded, service oriented folks, that can be a challenging conversation. And there's a reason why. And once you've trained your people, why this is, by the way, not a weakness. It's just natural. It's a sign you're human, right? Once you understand what kind of drives the feelings, the emotions that inhibit us from having those conversations with confidence, I won't say it's easy, but it becomes very simple. Like the path forward, again, the product negotiations clarity. Like it's clear what they have to do. Here's what I found with geotech professionals. Once they know what to do, they do it. It's a little bit of confusion, hesitation, or fear or anxiety that holds them back. Once you can show them the path, we're going to get it done. So principally, the reason why we struggle to have these conversations with clients and colleagues about value, and particularly talking about like AR situations, like account receivable situations or invoice work, or we could talk about scope creep. We talk about supplemental requests for work where we drop the ball on our end, our obligation to talk about fee, is we believe that other people are like us. And it's one of the most common cognitive biases that humans have. It's called the false attribution bias. So I'm going to look at Ryan. He's squared away. I'm squared away. You know what? Ryan probably sees the world like I do. He probably thinks like I do. He probably has the same fears and anxieties that I do. And man, I don't like to pay money. So if I ask him for money, he might think I'm a greedy, money grubbing, low quality, low baller kind of guy. When nothing can be further from the truth, not only are we not that just because we're asking for a fee, that's just called being a professional and getting paid. But also Ryan's a client with a totally different perspective on the project. Even though we're collaborating, even though they picked us, right? He doesn't mind paying money as long as he gets the project that he wants in the time that he wants so that they can use that project for what they want to use it for, whether that's public or private sector. Like they're building that thing for a certain reason. They're having you all do the geotechnical work around a project to move it forward safely and efficiently and in compliance, right? And they're willing to pay for that. They know they're going to pay for that. They're not you. So it's more important for us to conduct discovery to find out what our clients are like, what are their fears and anxieties and perspectives, because then we'll know exactly how to have these conversations in their world. When you do that, the checkbook comes out and you're not dealing with a 500-day overdue AR, because they know that they've got what they want, and they also know that they want to pay you because they hired a professional. So the false attribution bias causes us to avoid, delay, or go into conversations hesitantly because we think they're going to be like us and think that because we're bringing up money, it's all about money for us. That's just not true for most clients. Most clients expect that they're going to pay and going to pay fairly, especially after they've already secured you on a project. So once you can begin to think better and just conduct discovery, this is probably what Tiff has learned to do naturally. This is what Ryan has improved when he says he's got improved like production on that, improved outcomes, is that we can intentionally change the way that we view other people and how we conduct discovery so that we don't have to rely on bias.
We've used the word relationship a lot already, and I think of someone we think might not want to pay as kind of one end of the spectrum in terms of negative, and like a friendship or even a stronger friendship as the other end of that. When we say relationship in terms of having a good relationship to facilitate these conversations, I mean, where are we on that spectrum? I know, you know, a lot of people say about working with your friends sometimes can be challenging for various reasons. You know, where are we at on that spectrum from someone who doesn't want to pay us to a friend when we're talking about relationship being that area in between? I'm sure it varies.
How about in-laws? How about family? No, just kidding. Let's not go there. So what about a friend who owes you money? I mean, these things happen. We get all of our relationships. The really good ones are really good. Not because this is what I like to tell engineers and geotech professionals that I coach and that we do workshops with about active listening, emotional communication, relationship-based negotiation. We talk a lot about this. It's like, think of your strongest relationships. Think about your most valuable human relationships, bar none, not just professionally, in your life, top five friends. And I mean, if you're blessed, one of those is your spouse. Okay. Why? Is it because you start with 100 friends, and as soon as something goes bad, okay, they're out. And at the end of a long life, there's 5 people who nothing bad has ever happened in our relationship. Absolutely not. The reason why they're your top 5 is because you've been through a bunch of stuff with them, and you've worked through it, and you've communicated your way through it, and there's been probably a lot of grace and mercy on each side and forgiveness, right? So understanding that, we go back to the business world. Stuff's going to happen. Okay, so we've brought up a couple of different situations where client relationships can suffer. And consequently, by the way, every time that happens, there's a risk of client dissatisfaction creeping in. So it's going to start affecting not just the relationship with the client, the projects, okay, and our ability to get work from them. So it's a complex problem. What you don't want to do is write a script. You don't want a script for, I'm doing business with a friend and things are going badly. I have a script for AR gets past 90 days. I have a script for 180 days past AR. Go push the red button. AR just went past 365 days. They're over a year behind on a payment that's been invoiced. Go break into the vault and get that script. You don't want that. What you want are repeatable habits and frameworks that manage human emotions, no matter what the emotion is, and no matter what is causing the emotions to change. If you can conduct discovery, which really means a deep conversation about what's going on when something has changed, an area of confusion for one or both of us that we need to explore. And there are skills that make that easier. Managing the emotions of other people when they're really mad at us. That's a great skill for project managers to have, right? And then regulating our own emotions when we're upset about something, like we haven't been paid, so that we can continue to have a valuable conversation and not just begin to react to things in that conversation or the environment that are triggering us. Like, these are the skill set of a good negotiator, because we're going to have conversations about the bad stuff. Because if you do that, then if we wanted to limit, so not just the 5 best people in the world that are your friends, your 5 best clients. Why? Because you've been through stuff with them. And again, there's been some mercy and some grace and some thankfulness, but also some great projects, right? Some great work delivered. We're managing that relationship as project managers, as project engineers or designers or geotech professionals. We're constantly, every time we touch a client, we're managing not just the project, not just the work, not just the deliverables, but the emotions of the relationship. That's how you can do business with friends. That's how you can have tough conversations with friends. It's also how you can talk about accounts receivable. But underneath that, the dynamic, we're all the same. And it's an emotional dynamic that you're managing. And you have to regulate your own. You have to help other people regulate theirs. Because once people are calm, think about this. Once your clients are calm, you can work through anything with them. But if they're really, really mad and we drop the ball, you won't be able to do any work with them. And that's the power of human emotions for business.
I think of engineers as more left brain. And I feel like all this stuff we're talking about, relationship, all this warm and fuzzy stuff is really maybe right brain stuff, right? So is it consistent that engineers or technical people focus more on kind of that technical side versus sort of this emotional side of things? Is this a skill that technical people really have to work on because they're good at the technical and maybe not as good at sort of the emotional side of things?
That is an insightful question. I want this to be a conversation. Tiff, how would you answer that? Like, you've studied this, you have a kind of a more of a gift for that right brain stuff. How would you answer that?
I would say absolutely that yes, it is something that you have to work a little harder at and study and practice. And I say that from experience. Probably the first time I worked with Dan, I want to say it was 2016, maybe 2017. And I was a super bad listener. Super bad, because my brain goes to tactical. If I call you into my office for a meeting, we're going to get right to business, you know, and people say, well, just have, you know, have some whatever idle chatter. I'm like, I don't want to talk about the weather. Learning that just shutting up and listening, you know, after a leading question, like, what's going on in your world? That's my go-to now, right? What's going on in your world? If they want to go personal, they go personal. If they want to go business, they go business. But just 2 minutes of listening helps me understand their space a little bit better. And now we can solve problems better together. But I have worked super hard on it and I'm still not great.
And I don't want to scare you, but I have been a professional hostage negotiator, paid to resolve crises, especially hostage barricades, for 13 years, over 13 years. been trained by the FBI. And before that, I was a mental health response officer. So in terms of active listening and emotional communication practitioner, better part of my adult life, right? And I'm still getting better. And I'm still figuring out things about my own style and preference and areas I can improve. And I coach and mentor and consult for businesses in your industry. I've done that for about 10 years. And I'm still learning. And that's what's beautiful about the right brain side stuff. There's no end to it. You're not climbing a mountain, you're plumbing depths. And so far, nobody's found the bottom yet. You're mining the gold, and it's awesome. But there's a lot of work. And the farther you get, the more you have to work to find those areas of improvement. But in that initial mining effort, you can improve so much. There's so much gold right by the surface, particularly for people that are very technical minded, I found. The key is to valence it into a system. If you give somebody a process-driven, systems-based approach to nurturing relationships and conducting discovery and regulating and managing emotions and bias, they will dive right in. If you just walk in and give examples and make it like a style-based approach, it's very challenging. I almost say it's almost impossible. But if you give somebody a framework to follow, not a checklist, but a framework of like ongoing best practices, like these are great habits to have, and they work together, and if you continue to do this with people authentically, like you deeply desire to know what's going on in their world, they'll tell you, right? But you make it about them.
We talked about how, you know, engineers think differently. We talked about how they love tactical. Can we jump to tactical? Can you share the active listening FBI 8 techniques thing that you teach, whatever you would call it?
Well, I mean, we got to leave the people wanting more, Tip. But yes, we could. Let's talk about what you should be doing.
Maybe one tip, work with Ryan.
I found this to be helpful because there are people out there right now listening to this or whenever they're going to listen to it, right? And they're going to be like, I think I'm okay. I don't know. Maybe I'm not. Should I work with Dan? Should I call Tiff and Ryan and like see what I could do better? Well, let's just get like, here's a self-assessment. So let's talk about some stuff and you just, hey, are you doing this already? And at the end of it, if you're doing all of it, then probably you're great. Probably you're like Tiff or like how Ryan's where he's improved and you're on the way and it's great. But if at the end you're like, I don't think I do any of that consistently, then now you know, like this would be an area where if you wanted to be better at the business side of the house, this would be great. So let's just kind of run through that. Do you avoid? Number one thing, is there a conversation right now that you know you should be having with a client and you're putting it off? Okay, well, then you need assist. Tiff's like, no. Ryan's like, no. So if you out there go, yes, I know what it is. And I'm going to get to it, by the way. I'm going to get to it. But you're putting it off. It's because I guarantee you, you don't know how to prep it and you don't know how to execute with a system. You're going to go in there and wing it. And by the way, if you do, things will generally go okay. Like it's the courage to have the conversation often that'll improve it. But it also, it's very incremental, right? So what I mean by that is if you don't come in with a plan and you don't use a system, then any improvement you get will be limited and it won't be organic. It's not going to build and become, it's not going to work for you when you're not talking to the client. You have to claw and scratch for every improvement in that relationship. So the system is the way to go. So second one is, use the power of storytelling? Okay, this is critical. And so we kind of talked about the extremes, right? The extremes of, I'm uncomfortable with this conversation, whether it's with a colleague, a boss, or a client. I'm uncomfortable with the conversation. So I'm going to do like small talk. I'm going to do a little chit chat. I'm trying to ease into this, work up the courage to talk about the real elephant that I wanted to talk about in this room. Okay. And then the other extreme was like, Tiff says, you rip the Band-Aid off, go tactical immediately. Like, we're going to talk about this. What are your thoughts, right? The middle ground is to be the organizer, is to set the conversation, the topic. Hey, I would like to talk to you about the Voorhees project. And then say, what are your thoughts? And then you turn it to them and you invite them to tell you a story. This is the middle ground. You're not in control, but you're guiding the conversation. That's what we want. Because that's the environment where people tell stories. And if somebody were to tell you a story about how they think the project's going, particularly if it was the owner of the project, right? If it was the client, you would probably at the end of that, if you nurtured that and developed that story and pulled it out and let it grow, like you would know exactly what to do if the issue was AR. Or if the issue was that client needs to make a decision and they're dragging their feet. Or if it was, we're hearing from other people on this project that they're upset with us, but they won't talk to us about it. There could be 100 emotional situations that are creating risk for the project. And they all could be the beginning, the first stage of resolving all of them is let the client tell you a story about what's going on. And in stories, we hear emotions as opposed to data and facts and logic. So when somebody tells you a story, they're also going to let you know how they feel. When you know that, you probably know everything. Like you're well on the path. So that's second thing. Are you using storytelling?
We don't do feelings.
I know. And that's why we find ourselves in the predicament we're in. But if we did, if you got comfortable with emotions in terms of the right brain stuff, that's almost all of it. Just being comfortable to let people tell you how they feel and why is as a project manager in a geotechnical setting, you're going to know almost everything you need to navigate that and make great business decisions for your business, for representing your firm. If you shy away from emotions and you wait for people to calm down so that they can just tell you the facts and data and logic you need to execute your scope, then you're going to continually fall into the quicksand of human emotions. And the more you struggle with that, the more you sink. And the reason why is, going back to that, like the five friend analogy, the reason why is you've been through emotional experiences with those five and you've worked through it and you it got messy, but you worked through the emotions. The emotions are actually the vehicle that creates like durable, lasting relationship, high value relationship. It's based on shared emotional experiences. So when we shy away from the emotional experiences, we let that opportunity for an emotional experience subside so we can just do business. You miss the opportunity to seal client satisfaction. And that sounds crazy, but people do be crazy sometimes. That's how our brains work.
With those five friends, you've been through something difficult or scary. There was a good outcome. That's why they're still your friends. So you know that if something else comes up, it's going to end well. Whereas with some clients, if you don't have that history or that relationship, something like this comes up, you don't know how it's going to end. So a lot of times it's easier to avoid it because you assume it's going to end badly.
Have you ever, so are you all familiar with the term a vicious cycle, right? Yeah. So the flip side of that, we never talk about it. And I always laugh. I'm like, I'd way rather talk about this. So there is such a thing as a virtuous cycle, because that's the opposite of vice, right? Virtue. And the virtuous cycle is that relationship so strong that almost any kind of hiccup in the work that we're collaborating on or in the relationship, we'll be able to process that because it's more complex than this, but you can think of it like this. What we're going through now pales in comparison to what we've already been through in terms of quantity. The size of the problem here, we've been through way worse than this. So we just navigate it. We sail right through. Okay. There may be some grumbling. There may be some emotional communication we have to process. The risk and the fear just never spikes because the relationship's so strong. Whereas, as you're pointing out, Ryan, a newer client or a client where we don't have that virtuous relationship, yeah, that rocks the boat so hard it feels like we're going to capsize. And so we have to work way harder to keep the boat upright and water on the right side of the hole to move forward. That is 100% true. What hostage negotiators would tell geotech professionals is it's because the way to manage that is not all at once, but nurturing it. And every time you have a chance to talk to a client, you conduct a little discovery. You let them tell stories and you're making that investment over time because we know it's going to come. We're building rapport knowing that just by the nature of the work we do, there's going to be setbacks. It's a lot of moving parts, very complex. And so we want to build up the relationship so that it becomes resilient for the times when we need it. And I would say this, you can lose it, but the stronger it becomes, like the more resilient it becomes. And so it's harder and harder to have like a complete failure of the relationship. But it's that investment over time. And it's the delivery of promises over time that really builds it to the point where it's very resilient.
I'm seeing this a little differently than you two. So,
okay.
I'd like to, yeah. I swear I'm not being contrarian for the sake of contrarian, but I am super comfortable with the client call. Really comfortable. I'll just pause for a minute before I call, remember back something personal that I can bring up at the beginning, get that connection, go into what we got to talk about, check in on the project. Love that. Even if it's a hard conversation. However, when it comes to staff and the people closest to me, I forget to do that pause and I rush in, I get too tactical. So you're in highly stressful hostage negotiations. How do you remind yourself in the moment to pause and be present and not just go to that?
So two nights ago, I'm working for the police department, rolling around, and I roll out to assist some patrol officers at a call, and a lady has barged into her ex-boyfriend's house. They've had a disturbance. She has produced a big, about this size, jagged piece of glass. And she's holding it to her neck, laying on his bed. He's fled. And so we get there. She can't stay there. It's not her place. And she's obviously threatening self-harm. And she's very agitated. And so I'm talking with her. And this is where I won't necessarily go into the details, but I'll just say this. That's easy in terms of getting your adrenaline up, knowing that this is serious, knowing that the stakes are high, going back to your, like taking a moment, say, okay, hang on. What's my best practices? I'll go back to the language from earlier in the cast. What, this is emotional communications. I need to use active listening. I need to invite her to tell a story. I need to be in her world. Like, that's easy. The situation itself provides the fuel for authenticity. This is real. Okay. It's harder on a random Wednesday, just checking in with a client about something mundane, to recognize that. And this is going to sound weird. This conversation is just as important as that conversation, because this human being is no less or more important than that human being, just because they're having potentially a better day. And that the relationship I'm going to produce with this client in terms of long term is going to be way more valuable than Dan Oblinger having one conversation with a woman once in her life and he'll never see her again. Fair?
Mm-hmm.
The stakes are higher, right? But the value, I would argue, is pretty comparable. But it's just way, way harder to stay locked in and be like, this is real. This is super important. There's nothing more important right now for the next 15 minutes than this phone call. I'm going to push everything else out of my mind. I'm going to turn off my monitor or my notifications on my desktop or my laptop. I'm going to turn off the notification phone. I'm just going to listen. Way harder. Way harder because we don't recognize how important it is. The other one, it presents itself. It's immediate, right? But if, and I think, Tiff, we've talked about this when you and I've worked together. It's like just recognizing every time you touch a human being is so important. Every time you have an opportunity for them to tell you a story, like there's only X amount of those in your whole life. So don't blow it. Don't waste it. And then without all the extreme emotions, it goes really well. They just get in the way. So when you're just that mundane phone call, and now I'll say like level three, my teenager in their room, not wanting to obey me as a dad. And then dad brain kicks in and dad voice, it comes right behind it, right? Time to go to bed. No, I don't know. You better go to bed right now. That's not negotiation in the relationship-based system. Like conduct a little discovery. At the end of the day, you're still dad, right? Conduct a little discovery. At the end of the day, you're still the manager, right, Tiff? So you're still going to be able to tell the employee what to do. If that's, at the end of the day, how we have to proceed. Conduct a little discovery, because normal, rational, calm kids don't tell their dad, I'm not doing that. And normal, rational, calm employees don't tell their manager, I'm not going to do that, or fail to do what they've been told. So it's like there's a story here. And I think that's the hardest. The hardest is when you have emotional investment in the relationship and it's that mundane, like working through something small. That's the most valuable. And it's the hardest to, I think, to get back to those best practices. Say, hey, don't take the bait emotionally. What's going on? Just like Tiff would do when she brings an employee in, right? Hey, what's on your mind? And see where it goes. Like that's the key. So that's why we want a systems-based approach. Because in all those different situations, I want a consistent – I just want to have something that I do that's consistent. That it's a systems-based approach. I can rehearse in my mind the best practices right before I go into the situation. And no matter what happens in it, to Ryan's point, no matter what emotion or what situation arises, no matter whether they're using left brain or right brain right now, or they're really calm and they can actually function on both sides of the domain, like I want to be able to do business with them in the sense of making strong agreements. So one lady, strong agreement, set down a glass pane. Another one is, hey, tell me why you're not getting your deliverables in on time. Last one is, tell me why you're not obeying me as your father, right? Because if you know those three stories, why she would set it down, why they're not doing what it's supposed to do, why they're not obeying their parent, then you'll know exactly what, clarity. You'll know exactly what to do in that situation. That's it. Boom.
And pause first. That's what I got to do. Start pausing before the call.
I sprung that on you, Tiff. I'm sorry.
Oh, that was good.
She put it down. She put it down in like 20 minutes. It was actually really straightforward. I had another negotiate with me, and he's a younger cat, and he's just been through some really incredible negotiations, like really tough ones. And he's like, man, he's getting wise through that. And he's like, I didn't think she was very serious. It's like, she wasn't. But if we had been unserious with her, that would have gone badly. because she would have felt like she had to do something to get her attention. So when we use active listening, and like immediately she begins to like basically like, all you other people are terrible. I like you, you know, because you'll listen to me. And then you're going to get compliance.
Nice. Ryan, I was going to go somewhere, but it looks like you were going to, and I talk a lot. So go ahead.
Yeah. As we're talking through, I guess, who we're maybe more invested in when we're talking about an employee versus a new client, I can understand where multiple interactions with a client over a long period of time, you develop this rapport and this relationship. You're a hostage negotiator. You have to develop that relationship quickly, and it might be a one-off. And so maybe compare that to a new client. How do we take that skill or the skills that you're talking about for these long-term relationships to implement them quickly in a new relationship?
Ooh, that's good. That's good. Well, you need a SWAT team and some snipers and some CS gas, and that client will come. They'll snap too real quick. Like they'll really want to. No, I'm just kidding. So there's elements and things I do that they're not the same. They're not the same as like geotechnical business, and that's good. We don't want SWAT teams. But the SWAT team represents something that must be present in other negotiations, and that is a little bit of pressure. Like pressure is actually good. Pressure is good for relationships and good for projects because it gives people motivation and it gives people urgency. And that those are good things. Human beings need that to really make good decisions. Some of the biggest frustration right now I'm working through in cultures that I manage with my clients is managers and bosses who need to make a decision and they're not. And oftentimes when we look into it, it's because either the situation itself or maybe the team is not creating that sense of urgency for the manager to know they need to make a decision. And that's provided by some of the drama of the barricade for a SWAT negotiator. But we have to have conversations that highlight that with people so they know that, hey, this is important. This is important to us, your team, that you're supposed to lead. So we'd like a decision. I mean, how I just said it there is great. It's way harder when you have that emotional relationship with your manager. And they, in your mind, control the fate of your career for the next 2 to 3 years in their hands, right? And so then sometimes we don't have that conversation in that way. But to go back to this question of like what's the parallel between an initial like very high intensity negotiation from a police crisis to new client, let's say, large areas of unknown. And I think this is the biggest thing is understanding how little you know about your clients, even the top 5 clients. How much time do you spend with them? Like in a week? Oh, we have like 3 status meetings, about 3.5, let's say 3.5 hours in a week when the project's at like high phase. Okay. Well, how old were they when you first met them to pursue this work? Were they 50 years old? Okay. There's 50 years of stuff you don't know. Right. And so just recognizing then the importance of discovery. That's it. I think that's the biggest thing that I bring to the table coming from my background, from my industry, and then translating that for yours is just to understand there's a lot you don't know. And some of what you don't know could sink the relationship or this project. So go slowly and let them do a lot of talking. Let them do a lot of storytelling, particularly. And when you recognize emotions, explore those. Instead of avoiding those, we're not supposed to talk about that. See if they want to talk about it. And if they do, you're going to accelerate the rapport building process, which is exactly what you're asking about, Ryan. It's like, how do we move that efficiently? We don't want to move fast because people will feel rushed. But we do want to move efficiently. Efficiently for human relationships means cooperating with nature, cooperating with how they want to decide whether they like you, whether they trust you, whether they want to tell you more, whether they want to collaborate with you, which means implement your ideas as their own. We want to cooperate with that naturally instead of tricking them, gaming them, pushing them and rushing them to make those decisions. If they make the decision, it's durable and we'll be able to build upon it for both the relationship and the project delivery. If we trick them or force them, then we're going to have to go and rework that later because it'll fall apart. But the biggest thing is conduct discovery. Let them feel like they're in control. Super important. Let them feel like they're in control because they'll feel safe and they'll tell you the truth. As soon as they feel like they're out of control, defenses go up and you'll actually, this is where, and it's a weird talking to young PMs. It's like the first time it happens, it freaks them out. It's like the client lied to me. They were under contract, got an MSA or whatever. They are paying us to do this work and they're lying to us about the project. And I'm like, yeah, they don't trust you yet. It's one of the most natural human reactions to a relationship where there's not enough trust yet is I'm going to either withhold information or I'm going to tell little lies to keep myself safe. And the first time you experience that, it's the strangest thing in the world. 21 years of law enforcement, I'm way over that now. So but that's an important lesson for PMs, is warming the relationship up for a variety of reasons, but number one, so that the client can tell us the truth about satisfaction and scope and fee.
You talk a lot about trust and lying. I am building a relationship, like 3 years into building a relationship with a giant client, and I am always amazed at their lack of trust and how long it's taking to get to a place of trust. Like, literally, I will call and say, hey, I just saw you put out a post for a position that looks really close to the work we're doing for you. Are you guys looking to start doing that without us? Oh, no, I don't know what you're talking about. And then I'll find out. Yes, absolutely.
So there's an ongoing need with relationships. I've said this, like, you need to talk about the bad stuff and the good stuff. You need to be emotionally competent, right? And like to Ryan's point, I need to show you, I can do the technical side, but I can also do the emotional side, and I can do whatever makes the most sense for our relationship and the project right now. If this project is going to succeed and we need to talk about some emotion, some fear that's crept into the project, I'll do that. I'm the project manager. That means I manage the total project, including the emotional project. And that's crazy because people don't think about it like that usually in your guys' line of work, but they should. There's an emotional project right alongside the scope fee. It's satisfaction is an emotion, right? So to your point, if we do that, all right, we're going to have these conversations. I want to give you something tactical. I'm going to give you a best practice. When you need to have, so that's a great situation. Let's say you see something happen in the environment that could threaten your relationship with a client, but it also could be totally innocuous, right? And so we could certainly say, hey, I saw this. Are you intending? Do you plan? You know, you can even go open-ended. What's going on? And you've actually presented them an opportunity where potentially you've given them a strong motivation to lie. Because if I lie, I can preserve the relationship with you and conceal our plans. Okay. And so what I train PMs specifically is, if you want to be lied to, ask a question. And but it's the most natural thing for a left brain person. I've identified an area of confusion. I'm just going to ask them a question. Then they're going to answer it and I won't be confused. And in fact, if that were true, you wouldn't need me. But the fact of the matter is, you consistently ask the question and then they answer it and then you're more confused. Explain how that works, right?
All right. So what should I have done? Because I thought directness, right?
Yeah. Are you planning to get around, like do away with this MSA or whatever, because you're going to bring it in-house? And they say, no. And you're like, I don't like that. No, don't like it. So this is what I'm going to give you. See, if they've listened this long into the podcast, they've earned the right to not necessarily need me for like a whole bunch of work. Because if you just get this as your habit, it'll probably be enough to move the needle and you'll just be like, wow, I'm very comfortable having these conversations. And that is, don't ask a question, make a gentle observation. Say, hey, I noticed this, this job posting. It seems like you really want to bring this capability in-house and maybe here soon you won't need us. Left brain people sometimes like there's no difference in what you said and what the question was that you offered as a possible.
I'm like, very
no,
different.
Emotionally speaking, they're completely different. The words are almost the same, just in different order with no question mark at the end, and the inflection of the voice is different. That sounds super technical. It's as simple as this. The difference between a question asked like a question and a gentle observation made as a gentle observation. Hey, it seems like this. And for whatever reason, the human brain reacts to the risk that we take to make a gentle observation and be wrong. It tends to reward us with the truth. And then I have to say, then you might ask, why? I don't know. But I'm just telling you, it's one of the 8 active listening skills. It's one of the practices that I insist my police negotiators really get good at, because we got to know the truth fast. And like Ryan's pointing out, like you do this under compression, with all this pressure, you don't have time to build. Like it was because we use these gentle observations. We use them very early on. The lady with the glass, hey, it seems like you don't want us to come in there. You're trying to keep us away. She's like, yeah, I am.
I try to ask more questions, be more direct, and you're telling me to stop asking questions.
Stop it.
Beat around the bush.
So this is helpful too, okay? So geotech, right? Science. In science, what's the shortest distance between two points?
A straight line.
What's the shortest distance between trust between two people? Not a straight line. Not a straight line. It is one person. This is actually great. At least one person desires trust. This answer is different if both parties are distrustful, right? But in Tiff's example, I would like this client to trust us so we can serve them better, right? Okay, one party desires trust. So then the shortest distance is whatever feels most natural and comfortable for the other person who must make the trust decision. The way our hostage negotiation team looks at trust is it's an emotional decision that they're going to make about us. We don't get to control it. We can do everything right. We could be trustworthy and genuinely desire that they trust us, and they can reject it. That's how it works. So we invest in engaging in the behaviors and the verbiage that lets people, the most people in the most situations, like we play the odds in the casino. We do stuff that we know people tend to find to be very trustworthy and that people really respond to and engage in and want more of. And then we get to the trust decision very quickly. Principally, I'm just going to give away the farm here. It's storytelling. You let people tell you their story and you don't interrupt them and you don't tell them they're wrong and you don't try to tell a better story. You just let them tell their story and engage in it, like nurture it. Be like, are you saying this? Yes. Oh man, tell me more about that, right? Are you saying this, this, and this? Because that's interesting. And they say yes. Or you say, hey, earlier you talked about this. That was really fascinating. Can you tell me a little bit more about that side of the project, right? When you do things like that as a habit and it matches what they're saying, people will trust you. And the best part is they should trust you because you're working hard at respecting them.
Man, we could just end on that one. Mic drop.
Spike the football, walk off the field, right?
Yeah, I do have two quick closing questions lined up, but I want to give Ryan a chance to ask his questions first.
Cool.
We're talking a lot about these relationships with other people and us as geoprofessionals being technical, being left brain, having to develop these sort of right brain skills. What if the person we're dealing with is very technical? I mean, are there situations where we don't need this or do we always need this? You know, maybe they just want to get the business done. You know, like Tiffany says, walking in, getting started right away. Is that what they want? Or do we still benefit from going down this sort of relationship route, regardless of whether they're this technical person or someone interested in a relationship?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So you're never going to be wrong to use active listening wherever you can. It's just a great way to respect people, nurture relationships, find out what's going on. It's just so cool. The more you do it, the more habitual it becomes, the simpler and easier it becomes. You'll just do it naturally and you'll find out it's super efficient, super efficient. But there's times where you don't need it. And it's really, there's most times you don't need it. The litmus test is this. Are you doing business with people? Yes. Is everybody calm? Yes. Is everybody oriented towards a goal? Yes. You can do transactional stuff all day long. Think of a client that you have a great relationship with and you need a piece of data to execute a deliverable like today. And you call them like, hey, here's the situation. I need this today. Sorry. Can you get this piece of data to me right now? And they're calm and they're having a great day. They're like, hell yeah, obviously. Boom, email, done. We call that transactional communication. When you have a great relationship or there's an obvious mutually beneficial goal right in front of us, no problem. Okay. What I tell my clients is when you have new relationships, when it's obvious there's an emotional crisis, or, and this sucks, you start to do transactional language that has always worked in the past and it blows up in your face, whether that's with your client or your wife, you need to take a step back and you need to switch on your listening machine because that you overstepped. You thought you were in a transactional situation where we can move really fast and not nurture relations, and that is not the case. And so what I say is, like, most left brain people having a good day at work, you can be very transactional with them and that's okay. But you should probably nurture that relationship every once in a while still because they're still humans. But a left brain person, it doesn't matter what brain, if they're having a bad day at work, especially if they're bringing something from home to work that's just on their mind and it's tough. That's where active listening comes in. That's where the initial misstep. I do it too. I call somebody at work. I talk to my wife or my kids. And I think I can just get something from them. Things are good in my world, but I haven't taken the temperature in their world. And then I get the initial, like it's, I get that initial failure and I'm like, oh, okay, hang on. I'm missing something. What's going on? So that general observation, hey, I missed something, right? And then they'll tell you. And then we get back to transactional. So great question, Ryan. To sum it up, you can be in a transactional mode with great relationships or a great project or things going really good and there's high trust, no problem. But just don't forget to nurture that relationship whenever you can. On the flip side, when you hit the wall, it's because of human emotions. That's the only reason humans become uncooperative. It's emotions. And so you need to take a step back and figure out, conduct discovery, because something changed and you missed it. And that's okay. People usually are very forgiving of that when they see the humility of, hey, I dropped the ball here, or I missed something, or hey, I think I let you down. And then they tell you, yeah, you did. Like, you don't look, we're crushed over here. You got one project with me, but I've got 15 projects. And then you say, you seem overwhelmed.
All right. It's about wrap up time. I have a question for you, Dan. I've heard you on a few different podcasts recently. So I know that you have a business prediction for our industry on what you think is going to happen over the next few years in our industry. You know, we're tons of, everybody's dealing with mergers and acquisitions and private equity. What are you seeing coming for us?
I see kind of two trends that are going to converge. And I think the one you're talking about is that there's a movement within consulting engineering, kind of writ large, construction management, but then also geotech. And that is consolidation of assets. There's companies that are, they're looking for these boutique firms that have these capabilities that are they're niche, but they're very profitable, and they're acquiring those companies. And so there's, I wouldn't characterize it as an arms race yet, but there's definitely this movement amongst a certain kind of band of firm, like certain demographic of firm, to they're in acquisition mode and they're growing. And so that creates stress. That's culturally speaking, that's when like two icebergs collide. And so there's all kinds of different situations and scenarios, how that plays out depending on the sizes of the companies and the personalities involved. But the one thing it deeply affects is succession and leadership and management. And so most of my clients are really, they're either struggling or they're really oriented towards that issue. That's a big thing. Next 5 years is getting people, getting the bench set up for the talent. Who's going to be taking on the most critical roles, both technical roles, but then also executive leadership roles in firms. So there's that. Here's the other side of the house. And that is technology. I'm an old school guy. My background is ancient philosophy, and that's why I'm so interested in human relationships and virtue and vice and culture and communication and how we decide and how we have agreement. And that won't change. That's always going to be important, I think. In fact, I think the technology and these future issues make it more important for us to get the ancient things right. But the technology that's coming, AI in particular, I think we, even those of us that are really diving into it, would have to admit we don't even know the massive changes that this is going to bring to our society and especially to technical services like geotech. AI is going to rewrite. It's one of these technologies that we kind of understand how it works, right? But in application and in social movement and change, it's just beginning. And right now it feels glacial. But it's going to, I think, just talking to some people in that space, like we're just scratching the surface of what's going to change. And it's going to radically change human relationships. And I think our ability to connect as storytellers, which is so critical to the health of human beings, is going to be under assault by those two things, the stress and the change and the commotion that comes from corporate collisions, and the stress and the change and the ease at which we can unplug from people that AI represents and technologies like AI. So I think that's going to be the big challenge is how do we support our people to continue to be people and have human relationships that matter and that are valuable? Because I think we're learning like digital relationships are a poor substitute. And so in our culture, as we can, like, look at how much we're dispersing now, right? How can we maintain warm human relationships with our colleagues that are so necessary? Because it's kind of it's underneath everything we just talked about in this episode. How do we nurture that for when we need it, when things get tough? That's the challenge. If you're out there right now in an executive leadership role, I probably didn't tell you anything that was crazy different than what you're thinking about every day. This is, I think, the challenge of your industry for the next 5 years, is those two trends, but how it's impacting our culture and our people.
Thanks for that. All right, wrap up. I know our company's brought you in for our leadership development program, helping people listen better and coaching them on that. We've also brought you into our business development team to work with them on the client side. So you want to real quick wrap up, tell us a little bit about your services and how people can get a hold of you?
Well, I'm not for everybody, but I am for companies. I don't know if we said this. I exclusively work with like these industries, right? So architecture, engineering, consulting, which geotech falls under that umbrella. I know who my people are, and it's you. I don't want to work with like other industries. And so I'm not for everybody, but I am for if you are delivering work in teams and you are concerned about or you want to enhance your ability to communicate in a way that is relationship building. If you value the relationships alongside the revenue, I know I can help you if you're out there. But the key is this, is that you want to make an investment in your people's ability to communicate and get into their other people's worlds and make it about them and warm relationships up alongside of the actual communication. So the negotiation piece flows out of that. It's just one application of communicating well and listening well and managing relationship well. It's just one application that leads to good business decisions. So if you're out there and if you get something on your mind and you're not sure how to tackle it, the other cool thing I bring is I get to work with all these companies all over the country and see how they tackle things. And I've kind of built up my idea bank for how you solve problems in these areas, from the smallest design firm that really has a really cool, very specific mission to, you know, Fortune 50 large firms that are spread all across the country in different business models. So, and I love to work with y'all.
Yeah, it's hilarious that you say that. I think I told you I was other side of the country last week in a executives institute and networking with some people. And I got heads down tactical for a minute with this one guy that I love. And at one point he's like, oh, you need this go, no go checklist. This guy, Dan, developed it for me. And as he's talking, I just started laughing. I'm like, wait a minute, is this Dan Oblinger? And he's like, yes, you know, Dan. And we had to laugh because yeah, you helped him develop a checklist, or maybe you had it already, but it's the same kind of thing, same industry. I need it. I'm going to use it. So that was huge.
I do get around. I'm probably the worst kept secret in engineering and design services in the United States.
All right. Well, I don't think we heard your website or how they can get a hold of you.
Oh yeah. So let's say you don't want to give me any money at all. Go to LinkedIn, connect to me on LinkedIn, Dan Oblinger. It'll be a picture, a pretty epic picture that my son took of me in my negotiator outfit. My company name is Leadercraft. I do want to say this. My workshops are very different. If you like to sit and not move and not feel threatened at all emotionally or intellectually, probably not your guy. But if you like to work in teams solving little like gamified problems that then lead to really huge payoffs in like your ability to communicate emotionally and actively listen and negotiate, that's what I do. So if you have a burning issue and you're like, I know I want Dan to like take a look at this and give us some possible solutions, go to my website, www.masterlistener.com. And you can go find a form to fill out and describe kind of what you're up against. And we'll get together for free and decide if it makes sense for me to work with your company. And if nothing else, I'll give you some good ideas of what you can do on your own without me. That's it.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Ryan, any closing thoughts?
No, I'm still digesting everything that I've heard. Yeah, it's been a great conversation.
All right.
No, this like we said at the beginning, I have had very little exposure to Dan's work. Tiffany introduced me to it, but I haven't spent a lot of time with it. Haven't been through any of the workshops or anything. So for me, a lot of this is new-ish, right? So yeah, great stuff. I appreciate it.
Oh, trust me, Ryan. I've used some of these on you. I've definitely used some Dan tools.
If you're in that seat, by the way, if you're in Ryan's seat, like, look, I'm just starting, but I'm curious, and you want to make a small investment. If you're dealing with Tiffany and you're like, I'm tired of her using this stuff on me, then just go to Amazon, and I have three books, okay? I have a book called Life or Death Listening. That's where I would start. And it lays the foundation for how you can flip the script. If you're left brain, this book is written for left brain people who want to dive into right brain stuff and they don't know where to start. It's a story that develops into some like skills. 28 Laws of Listening, once you read the book, if you really like it, there's a 28 Laws of Listening is my second book, and it is a month program, it's 4 weeks program. Every day you do one thing, and the idea is at the end you should have a habit. And the third book I wrote with a dear friend of mine, Alan Zhang, and he and I are both consulting negotiators with totally different industries we serve, but we kept running into the same problems. And so these are 30 myths. It's called Negotiation Mythbusters. It's 30 myths that we continue to run into working with clients where they thought, I don't say wrong, it is kind of wrong, but they weren't looking at things right. And that made them make bad business decisions in the area of negotiation. And so it just says, hey, here's something you probably think or you might think. And if you do, we would ask you to rethink that. Think about it like this. There's an element of truth in it, but think about it like this. And we tell stories, and I think it's fantastic. It's called Negotiation Mythbusters. We wrote it together. That'd be a low-cost, easy way to make a small investment in what you do.
Nice. And Ryan actually reads. I look for him to give me the Cliff Note versions of everything, so that'd be perfect.
Perfect.
I love books.
Yep. All right. Thanks a lot, Dan. As always, really appreciate the time with you and the insight. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Tiffany. Thanks. Thanks, GBA.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Leadership Lounge. If you liked it, please subscribe and share this podcast. Also, if you're using a business coach that you love, let us know. Our interviews are based on personal experience with these coaches or referrals from industry peers. You can reach out to Ryan or me on LinkedIn, and you can always reach GBA at geoprofessional.org. Remember, GBA is about elevating the geoprofessional value. We all do better when we work together to elevate our industry.